The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. A little later on in the program, Don Hutchinson will be here to reflect on what wasn't the most exciting day in the Premier League. The same, though, can't be said about the first Clasico of the season, Real Madrid, with a 3-1 victory over Barcelona. Here to reflect on it, Stevie Nicol and Ali Moreno. A lot to get through in this game. Overall, let's start with the fact, Ali, Real Madrid worthy winners?
I thought so. And I think what we saw from Real Madrid today that we didn't see against Cadiz, that we didn't see against Shakhtar in the first half in particular, was energy, was intensity, temperament, character, all the things that you come to expect from a Real Madrid team that we hadn't seen lately. And yet today, this was a team that at the very least was there to compete and was good enough in the day to take advantage of the opportunities in front of them. The more that Barcelona started controlling the game and creating some opportunities and half chances here and there, and they kind of got stretched, that allowed then Real Madrid to take advantage of those spaces and the moments in which Barcelona was unable to defend. And I think no better example than the goal by Valverde, in which he starts his run in the midfield right next to Sergio Busquets, and somehow, as Benzema is allowed to turn by Piqué and Lenglet, Valverde creates that space, generates that gap between him and Busquets, and it paints a clear picture as the lack of athleticism out of Barcelona from the midfield, specifically and especially from Sergio Busquets. That spacing behind is won by Valverde. He scores a goal. And those spaces were available to Real Madrid. If they had been just a little bit better on the counter in a couple of moments, this game could have been over a little bit sooner. However, I think in the end, Real Madrid will take the win. And I think they were deserving winners in the way that they approached the match and tactically how they approached the match. Overall, I thought Real Madrid were better than Barcelona.
Stevie?
I'm not sure I would go as far to say they were worthy winners. You know, as soon as you asked that question, the two things that came to my head were Messi, when he left Ramos for dead, and Courtois made a good save, and the header for Coutinho. I think those could have completely changed this game. I would agree with Ali that the Real Madrid we saw today compared with the last couple of games was chalk and cheese. Yes, they had energy. Yes, they got about it. Great goal from Valverde, a great run, although it was assisted by the ineptitude of the Barcelona backline. But listen, if this game had been a draw, I would not have had a problem, because Barcelona, had they taken the chances, not only could they have got something, they actually might have ended up taking 3 points. But listen, I won't argue with the way Real Madrid performed. So I guess for that, that's how they got the 3 points.
First half, we saw those two early goals, and then there was kind of chances for both teams. It was quite an open match. Start the second half, clearly it was a lot tighter. And then there was the defining moment, the penalty awarded for the pull of the shirt on Sergio Ramos. The referee initially missed it, obviously went to the monitor and gave the penalty that Ramos then duly converted. Ali, this is, of course, the big talking point from the game. Penalty for you?
100% a penalty. And when people... It's funny to me when people say, well, he pulled the jersey, but it wasn't that strong of a pull. But wait. Where in the laws of the game does it say the strength of the pull of the shirt must be to the point to where Sergio Ramos can actually be put off balance and therefore impeded and so on and so on and so forth? No. Was there a pull of the shirt? Yes. Was it unnecessary from Lenglet? Yes. And here's the other thing that I'll tell you about the pull of the shirt by Lenglet. The reason he pulls the shirt is because initially he loses Sergio Ramos. So he doesn't know where he is. And as the ball is being played and he's trying to keep his eye on the ball and he's trying to find Sergio Ramos, the only way that he can do it is by holding him, holding on to him. And as Sergio Ramos is now trying to play the ball that is behind Lenglet, Then Lenglet pulls him by the jersey and impedes the player, and so therefore it's a foul and, of course, a penalty.
Stevie?
Oh, so it's apparently all day long, 100%, as Ali said. And again, we're talking about how... I question how kids are being taught how to defend. Listen, when you're defending a ball coming into the box, you have an eye on the ball and an eye on the player. And the reason you have an eye on the ball is so you can judge the flight of it. A, to go and attack it, or B, you know whether your opponent is going to get anywhere near it either. And Langley doesn't do that. All he's doing is keeping his eye on Ramos. And that's why he ends up pulling him. Because if he had his half an eye on the ball, he would have seen that Ramos wasn't doing anything. He probably wasn't even going to get a touch on it. So the fact that he pulls him is just downright rotten defending. And as Ali said, it's not how hard you pull it. If you pull it, it's against the law. It's a penalty kick all day long.
Stevie, people argue that, but wait, he's pulling in one direction and he falls in the other direction. Ramos is selling this completely, isn't he?
So what? What difference does it make? He's pulling his jersey. Everybody who comes out with that argument starts with, well, yes, he's pulling his jersey. So stop the conversation there. Right. I don't care whether he jumps 6 foot in the air or digs a hole 6 foot in the ground. His jumper's been pulled, so it's a penalty. What happens after that is immaterial.
So then
the other thing, Dan, is that it's a reaction by Lenglet. As he initially loses Ramos, he then panics. He doesn't find the ball. He doesn't judge the flight of the ball correctly. And because he's panicking, that's when you see that he's now pulling the jersey. It is, in the beginning of the play, it is a mistake by Lenglet that then he's trying to cover for. And because he's panicking, that's where the pull comes from. And that's when he's impeding the process of the player. Regardless of whether Ramos is a poor diver or not, or a poor embellisher or not, that's not what we're evaluating here. What we're evaluating here and analyzing, is there a pull on the jersey? Yes, there is. It's a penalty.
What surprised me then, because Real Madrid took the lead, Stevie, and then they started to take control of the game. It took up until the 80th minute for Koeman to actually make some changes, to bring on Griezmann, to bring on Dembele.
It's a tough one to give you a defining answer, Dan, because, listen, I played for a side in Liverpool that didn't make a lot of substitutes at all because, you know, the philosophy was that I trust the players on the field and the game lasts for 90 minutes and you can win it in the first or the last minute. The other side of the coin, however, is does the coach trust the players to bring them on? Does he actually think they're going to do anything? And the fact that he waited so long, in my opinion, tells me that he doesn't really trust them. And we know he doesn't trust Griezmann because he's not even starting. For a guy who's over 100 million, not to be starting tells you that the coach doesn't fancy him. And so putting him on is just he's got some ability. Maybe he'll pop up with a goal. I don't know. So they fling him on. I would suggest Koeman doesn't trust who sat on the bench beside him.
Ali?
Well, I agree that Koeman doesn't trust the players that he has available. What I would say is that the players on the field at the time were not giving Ronald Koeman any sign of life either. And so I thought that there was a need for Koeman to make a change just to give the team something different. Because after the Sergio Ramos penalty, you may have thought, maybe Barcelona is able to create or generate some momentum, just even based out of desperation. And it never really did happen. And because you needed something different, a little bit of energy coming from somewhere, I thought that there was a time there and an opportunity there for Ronald Koeman to make at least a couple of substitutions and then bring something different on the field. That never really did happen up until the 82nd minute. And the other thing that I'm conflicted about, and the other thing that I don't quite understand, whether you like Griezmann as a player or not, whether he fits with Barcelona or not, the conversation as to why he didn't play against Ferencváros was because, well, there was speculation as to him being rested for this El Clásico match. Well, that rest got really, really, really long. And it extended itself all the way to the 82nd minute. Clearly, what we're being told and whatever speculation and conversation there is about Antoine Griezmann, Ronald Koeman, that everything is good, everything is fine. I've talked to Antoine, he's great, no problem. He has a role in this team. That role is diminishing by the minute.
What I thought was a little tiresome this week, Ali, is that we heard Piqué come out and criticise the board and the president and all that. And I get everything that's been going on behind the scenes and the frustrations that some of the big players at Barcelona have had. Yet you feel in this sort of game, particularly in the second half, they kind of gave up. That's got nothing to do with the president. That's got to do with you and the pride and the shirt.
And it's not the first time, not even the first time this year or this week. Against Getafe, it was essentially the same reaction, or lack thereof for that matter, that once they give up a goal, it's almost as if, well, you know what, guys, it's just not happening. And you may be able to accept that at some other club, at a different level, and in a different stage, but not Barcelona at home, at the Nou Camp, in El Clásico against Real Madrid. That is unacceptable. And we saw from these players that there was nothing left after the Sergio Ramos penalty. The reaction that you thought was coming never did come. And I would also say, as much as we love Lionel Messi and as good as he was at times early on in this game, in the last 20 minutes, there was no Messi. And maybe it's a problem with the board. Maybe he's having some issues with what's going on with his personal situation. Or maybe it's the fact that there was no need for him to be on the field against Ferencváros for the last 30 minutes of that game, and yet there he was. And Ronald Koeman, who posts himself as the boss, as the one making the decisions, as the one making the phone calls, as the one who's telling people that they're going to be here or not here, well, maybe there was a chance there to rest the player so that he could be the impactful player that you need him to be in a moment like this. And it didn't happen for Messi, and it didn't happen for many other the big names of Barcelona in this particular match against Real Madrid.
And then almost to emphasise... Go on, Stevie.
No, I was just sitting thinking, you know, when you're leading up to a game like this and you've got players, particularly the senior ones, still harping on about the board... It smells of two things. One, it smells of a bit of an excuse before the event. Mm. But it also smells of they don't trust the people they're standing next to on the field. Because otherwise they would have their eye on the ball. They'd be concentrating on the game coming up. Instead, they're too busy covering the backside, blaming the board. And also, in my opinion, it's a bit of a shot at I don't trust the player standing next to me.
And then who is the player that Barcelona put forward at the end of the game to speak after this defeat? A man who doesn't speak Spanish and has just arrived, Serginho Dest, speaking afterwards, Ali. Obviously, wow. A lot of eyes on him from an American perspective. First US player to play in El Clásico. How would you rate his performance?
I actually thought that Serginho Dest was really good today. And thought that he looked very comfortable. He looked like he belonged. He didn't look like a player who was making his first appearance in El Clásico. He had a real tough job in front of him in handling the speed of Vinicius and also Mendy whenever he added himself into the attack. But I thought that Serginho Dest was very calm, very comfortable on the ball. A couple of moments in which he showed his skill going forward. Could have been better with the final ball and the final decision. But overall, Serginho Dest was, I thought, very good, and certainly far from being the reason of Barcelona losing today. There were far more important reasons and players that you can point at and say, hey, you know what, this guy came up short today. I don't think Serginho Dest came up short. I actually thought he was a very good player today.
Ali Moreno, thank you very much. Barcelona then 12th in La Liga. Real Madrid top of the table. Meanwhile, Atletico Madrid moving up as well with a 2-0 victory over Real Betis. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Well, let's focus on the Premier League now, shall we? Not one of the best days, really, considering what we've seen so far this season. Not a lot of excitement, kind of epitomised by the game at Old Trafford. Manchester United 0, Chelsea 0. Stevie Nicholls still with us. Don Hutchinson joins us. Don, who's happy with the draw?
Oh, Frank Lampard all day long. I thought his side played quite well for half an hour of the game. Tactically, I thought he got it spot on. Ben Chilwell was the free man. They just couldn't make a count. They created some good chances, but I think, you know, his side were vulnerable when they drew 3-3 last week against Southampton. So he would have went there off the back of the Sevilla game, getting a clean sheet. And he'll be delighted defensively. They didn't do enough going forward. But when a team like Man United have done the double over you last season, you know, he would have been fearing the worst, even though he played sort of a load of attacking players to try and win the game. He'll take a 0-0.
You agree, Stevie?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Yeah, I think he'll be delighted. It's kind of a role reversal for him after this game. He'll be absolutely delighted with what they did defensively, but he'll be so disappointed, as I was, that going forward, the front three, they just had no punch whatsoever. And the fact that he took all three off and put three more on tells you he obviously thought that as well. So, yeah, Frank, no question, we'll be happy of the two managers.
From a United perspective, obviously, they'll be happy with a clean sheet, Don.
Yeah, they will. But at the same time, they didn't really pull up any trees being the home side, did they? I expected a little bit more. And he was brave, by the way, Ollie and his team selection, no Pogba. He didn't feature in the last couple of games, as in starting the games when they won the last two games, Brighton and PSG, even though he had an impact when he came off the bench. So he was brave. I'll give him that, Ollie. But I was looking at the pictures of Donny van der Beek just sat in the stand, really gloomy, just thinking, what on earth am I doing here? Just not playing any part, you know, so far since he's been there. And it just looks like a real sort of panic signing that they don't really need. It's a shame for Donny van der Beek, really.
The chances that United did have saw Rashford test Mendy on a couple of occasions. Frank Lampard would be delighted to see a goalkeeper make some saves.
Yeah, no question. There was three of them, in fact. He made three fantastic saves. I'd actually forgotten about the Van der Beek thing. When I saw the team, I'm thinking, Juan Mata, Van der Beek must be injured. But there he was, sat in the start. I'm thinking, this guy must be absolutely, as Don said, ready to get himself out of there. I mean, what has he got to do to get a game? Juan Mata plays before you. Oh, my goodness. But, yeah. Mendy absolutely was Chelsea's man of the match, probably why they got a point. But as I said before, unfortunately, De Gea, up the other end, had a cup of tea and a cigar out.
Well, he may have had to face a penalty, but Don, have the rules changed? Is headlocking okay now?
My goodness me. How on earth that's not a penalty, I'll never know. I mean, it was a clear penalty, even in real time. You spot it in real time. Harry Maguire's got his hands around Aspilicueta's neck, and he sort of drags him to the floor, and it's like a double hand around the neck as well. Stops him from jumping. And I thought, as soon as VAR take a look at that, they'll instruct the referee, A, to either give a penalty or go and look at the monitor. The fact that they didn't even check it was the bizarre thing.
Stevie?
I actually got into trouble before this game started because I walked past my grandson and I did exactly that. I put my arm on him, gave him a headlock, said, right, get out of that. And Eleanor gave me into trouble. And then I turned the TV on and there's Harry Maguire at it and nobody said I want to. How's that? That was a joke. That was ridiculous.
Yeah.
How somebody could have another look at that and then decide there was nothing wrong with it is absolutely incredible. I was speechless.
I think that's it. I think that's really all there is to say about that game. Let's move on to West Ham 1, Manchester City 1. This wasn't very good either, Stevie.
Ooh, I tell you what, Man City going forward have just lost the spark, haven't they?
Yep.
I mean, they lost a goal, yes, but it really was all down to Antonio, the way he took it. It wasn't even a half chance. But going forward, with the amount of possession City had, you know, we're used to seeing City, yes, up against a lot of bodies. And West Ham did exactly that. Just outside the edge of the penalty box, bodies everywhere. But we're used to City being slick and plenty of movement and good passing and good weight of passing, good time of runs. All those things have absolutely disappeared. And then even when they do get it right and they do get through, they can't take the chances. You know, Sterling could have got 3 points wrapped up through one-on-one with the keeper. Horrible first touch. And they only end up getting a point. But, yeah, I'll tell you what. Pep's going to be scratching his head how he can figure this all out. Because defensively, they're still shaky. And going forward, wow. You know, where's all the movement and the chances coming from? I'm not quite so sure.
Stevie, why has it changed so dramatically? Is it the fact that they haven't got a fully fit striker? Aguero, of course, taken off at half-time. Foden coming on, making a bit of a difference. No Jesus. Sterling, not very much not in his game, clearly, at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of it. You know, you can't argue with the ability. And certainly, listen, 100% fit Aguero, regardless of how anybody else is playing, can get you goals from nothing. So when you've lost that, then, you know, the burden goes elsewhere. And unfortunately, there's nobody carrying the burden. And they can't. Sterling can't. Bernardo Silva's not the same player he was. Mahrez, same. Foden's coming off the bench. He's not somebody that you can put a burden on yet. So you've got just too many players that are not quite at their best and not quite sharp. Now, I guess the only thing you could say about Pep is that he has to get them sharp. They look a little sluggish as you're doing the right things in training. But after that, it's down to them. You know, Pep can't put the ball in the net and make passes for them. So, yeah, there's a few crises of confidence, should I say, going forward for Man City.
Don, there'll be people shouting at us saying, well, I tell you what, if you had 8 points after 5 matches and it was any other manager, we'd be shouting, calling for his head.
I said that today. I said it must be one of Man City's worst starts for a long time. And Stevie's right. There's something about Man City now where you watch them, Dan. And, you know, I commentated on the game where they beat Watford. I don't know if it was last season or the season before. And they beat them 8-0. And they've put fours and fives and sixes. And they can smash anyone. I think in the last 5 games against West Ham, the number's something like 17 goals to one. Now, West Ham have got like 1 goal in about 5 games and they beat them by fours and fives and fours and fives and sixes. This Man City side at the moment, and I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's an easy out for me to say. I think they're struggling without any fans. I think Liverpool were the same when I watched them tonight. And I think Man City fans, and I think Pep needs the emotion inside the stadium. I think the players need that as well. I think I would struggle.
Yeah, Don, everyone's on the same playing field, isn't it? You can't say that West Ham get a point because there are no fans. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but hold on. It affects the better teams more than it does your average side.
I think 100%. Go on, Stevie.
Oh, because your best players feed on emotion and nerves and excitement and the crowd and the vibe and the whole thing. You know, that takes them to another level. Mm. You know, ability-wise, they're a level above the opposition. But you add all the other stuff, the emotion and everything else, it takes them up to another level again.
It's like, I think the best players, like Stevie said, Dan, I think they need jeopardy. When you've got jeopardy on the game and you've got emotion, you've got adrenaline, all the things going through the game, if you're an exceptional player, an exceptional team, you can raise the standards and go to another level. Some of the average players, I've been a little bit harsh on the good players, but you know what I'm saying? They can play the game at their own pace and bring the likes of Man City and bring the likes of Liverpool and bring all the top sides a little bit closer to their level. That's why I think, and it's not the only reason, I think Man City, you've got loads of reasons, and I think it might be a bad time before they go into the transfer market and just go and buy Harry Kane for £200 million because they need him, because they can't keep going on with a half-fit Aguero and Jesus needs a little bit of time, and he's a workaholic, but he spends so many man hours closing the ball down. When he does get his chances, he's absolutely shattered. They need someone, I think, when they're picking the team sheet and it comes in, and Man City, you've got someone like Harry Kane leading the line. I think then it puts the fear into the other sides. I think they've lost their fear factor at the moment.
Meanwhile, Saturday night, Liverpool top of the table, Stevie, after that win against Sheffield United.
That was hard work. It was hard work for them, and it was hard work for me watching it, I can assure you. Oh, my goodness. I'm back. I remember a couple of years ago saying to you, you know what, it's great to watch Liverpool now and not have to worry. And not be on the edge of your seat wondering what's going to happen. Wow, that seems a long time ago now, because it's all a bit worrying right now. You know, things are just not quite going, and they're working hard, but that emotion that we were talking about earlier absolutely is affecting Liverpool too, not having a crowd there, and all the things that go along with playing at the top level. But they were the best team. They did go behind, which was a little worrying, but they won the game. They're not at the best, and they won the game, so I'll take it.
Penalty for you, Don?
Yeah, it's one of them where Fabinho shouldn't even be making the tackle. I mean, Jordan Henderson got right into him while they were waiting for the VAR decision. It was so close. I mean, I thought it was a foul. I thought Fabinho got a bit of the ball, but he went through the man at the same time. I thought it was a foul. Just the question mark then was it on the line or just out? And it was so borderline. I think I agree with the referee. He had to give it in the end.
Stevie?
Yeah, you don't make that challenge. You don't give the referee a decision to make. Listen, you can argue all day whether it is or whether it isn't. I heard every argument under the sun. He didn't go through him. He went round him. He went over him. But Fabinho put himself in that position where he's making the referee make a decision. And the decision went against him.
Gentlemen, as always, thank you very much. So as I mentioned, Liverpool top on the table. They are level on points with Everton. Everton have the chance to stretch their lead to 3 points once again over their City rivals on Sunday when they're away against Southampton.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
Let's focus on Germany now, shall we? And I know, big surprise, I hope you're sitting down. Bayern Munich, brilliant once again. This time defeating Eintracht Frankfurt, who came into this match unbeaten. They won by 5-0. Lewandowski with a hat-trick. Sané as well with a cracker as Casey Keller joins us. Case, we're kind of running out of superlatives to describe this Bayern team, who are the best side on the planet right now.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, after last season in the Champions League, and they've just started this season where they left off, they just score bunches of goals. And big surprise, Lewandowski had a hat-trick. And not only did he have a hat-trick, but he had the perfect hat-trick. It was the left-foot, right-foot header. I mean, when you have probably, you know, the world's best out-and-out goal scorer, plus so much talent to go along with it. It's a big reason why Bayern are probably the bookies' favorite to obviously win the Bundesliga, but possibly even retain the Champions League.
Leroy Sané, when he's at his best, Casey, I think is one of the best players to watch, because he's so exciting when he's running at pace, and we could see what he could do as well in front of goal. That was special.
Oh, yeah. When he came inside, I mean, I think it's one of those things where the defender is trying not to let him come inside, but he's that talented, he's that quick, and, you know, the finish was superb. So, it's not only the Lewandowski show, obviously. There's so many other players, and when you think of someone like Gnabry was unavailable, and players, you know, rested after the Champions League, it is such a strong squad, and if they stay somewhat healthy, because they obviously have the squad to be able to cope with the odd injury, but there's no reason why they can't just go on to have another remarkable season.
Speaking of injuries, Casey, of course, the one negative from this game, Alphonso Davies coming off very early in the tie. He'll be out for 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, that'll be frustrating, because Davies, who was, I wouldn't necessarily call it criticized, but his manager, Hansi Flick, was actually saying that he didn't feel he was playing as well as he did last season, that the standard that he set last year, he just hasn't matched that yet. And a big reason why Lucas Hernandez had been playing so much. And so this was a big opportunity for Alphonso to get back into the side, to really kind of get his form back to that is really, you know, people have put him in that argument as the best left back in the world. And look, I understand young players, so much success so quickly. I understand where you're going to have the little bit of a dip, but this will be frustrating, because now he's going to have some time out. He's going to have to get himself back fit, get that fitness back. And then obviously, if Lucas Hernandez, we know, is a very, very good player, you know, he could very easily establish himself as that out and out, you know, back, and it could make things even that much tougher for Alphonso. But even though Alphonso has a huge future, and it is frustrating, I mean, I'm sure not exactly what the Canadian national team wanted to see either.
Meanwhile, Borussia Dortmund in the derby against Schalke, they had to wait until the second half to make the breakthrough, but in the end, it was a comfortable 3-0 victory for them. Who better to talk us through the goals than Erling Haaland?
Yeah, it's good. You know, he's been out with Corona, and now he came strong back, and that's how it is. You know, it's important for him and important for us to get this goal today, and 3-0 against Schalke. Yeah, we take that, huh?
Of course, bro.
Let's get to your goal. I saw you looking a little bit frustrated in the warm-up when you missed a chance. I mean, I then saw you smash one in on the volley from 30 yards. Where everything
it was good,
all,
huh?
It was pretty good, I have to say. I hope they caught it on video. Let's talk about the goal you scored during the game, though. Talk me through that.
Yeah, I was waiting when I had the ball. I was waiting for Jaden to sprint, but he didn't like to sprint so much. So so then I played to him, and then I was just running like I do best, and then he played it perfectly. And yeah, I've been training with my right foot, and it's good to get a goal with my right foot.
First time I see you make a chip, man.
Good, huh?
Actually, always full power, but he hits it in.
Akanji there alongside Haaland after the game. Of course, Akanji's got important, Casey, because Schalke were frustrating Dortmund up to that point.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, the first half, it wasn't a classic Dortmund performance. And some of that had to go down to that Schalke had obviously come in such horrific form. They just knew that they couldn't open up. They had to be extremely conservative. But they were aggressive, and they made it difficult, and they stepped out tight whenever the space was there for Dortmund to try to open them up. And then eventually, yeah, I mean, off of the corner, it just kind of eventually just didn't get cleared. And in a Akanji with that, you know, nice little, you know, toe poke that gets it into side netting. So it was crucial. And then from there, Dortmund only got stronger. And then obviously Haaland with that fantastic finish to really, in the second goal, you know, more or less sealed it. The third was just icing.
It was a nice assist as well from Jadon Sancho in the second goal for Haaland.
Yeah, very nice. And I think it was great. I mean, when you see what Haaland did when he gained possession, didn't have a lot of help, just kind of pirouetted back centrally, waited for the help to come, gets it to Sancho. But then one thing that I think every striker needs to take a look, every young striker, look at what Erling Haaland did after he passed the ball to Sancho. He absolutely sprinted into the area. So regardless if he didn't get the ball, he was going to create space for someone else. But knowing the quality that he is, the pace that he has, once he got on that run and the pass was perfect, and then, you know, the two of them are joking around about his right-footed finish, but it was something special. And to be able to go from that pace, from that distance, and then have that composure just to chip it over the onrushing goalkeeper, it shows why, you know, we were talking earlier about Lewandowski is the top goal scorer in the world. Well, this kid is going to be biting at his heels real quickly.
And to have that sort of technique, and they were laughing about the fact that normally he just blasts it, but to do that sort of skill with your weaker foot, and he's, as he says, he's been practicing with it, just shows kind of his dedication to the cause.
Well, that's the whole idea, right, Dan, is you play to your strengths, but you work on your weaknesses. And obviously he felt that he needs to continue to work, you know, on those small aspects of the game that he can improve on. And that's, you know, that dedication to the craft is the reason why certain players who have already the genetic ability, the physical ability, the mental ability, that just makes them that extra bit special. And he obviously comes from a football pedigree, and he's got the work ethic and the mentality to go along with it. And that's why the sky's the limit for this kid.
So wins for both Bayern and Dortmund, but neither atop of the table. That still remains Leipzig with a win today against Hertha Berlin. The matches continue tomorrow. Three games for you on ESPN+. It's Wolfsburg against Bielefeld, Werder Bremen against Hoffenheim. Then on Monday, Bayern Leverkusen, play host to Augsburg. Meanwhile, El Tráfico tomorrow live on ABC. LAFC taking on LA Galaxy. That game live at 3:30 Eastern.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
That's it then. Thank you very much, as always, for watching. Thanks to Don and Casey for being on. Stay tuned, though, as we try and get to the root of Stevie's grumpiness today, as he's with us for extra time alongside Ali. Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Ali Moreno. And I tell you what, it's very rare. I've worked with Stevie a long time to see him in a bad mood. But today, grumpy Stevie is very much with us.
No comment.
He really is. He's never grumpy.
I am.
Oh, dear.
My granddaughter was calling me grumpy today.
Well, she's right. Okay, let's get you through this,
is.
And then you can have some mints, and then you'll be happier.
Right, hurry up then.
Right.
Just mints?
He's going to shout at me now. Are we going to get on with this or what? More enjoyable for Stevie, a spirited 0-0 draw or a mistake-riddled 4-4?
Oh, 0-0 all day long.
Oh, shut up.
Absolutely.
Why? You want goals. We watch this game for goals.
Oh, why do you want mistakes all over the shop?
You want goals.
You want a good battle, a good spirited fight, a good 90 minutes. You don't want to watch a bunch of amateurs making mistakes left, right and centre on the 8 goals. No, thank you.
Oh. Ali, what would you prefer?
He really is grumpy today.
I know.
He really
honestly
is grumpy. If it is a 4-4 game, there's bound to be at least a couple of goals that are worth watching, and that's better than watching a 0-0 game.
Messi hasn't scored an open play or assisted in the last 7 league games. Is his age catching up to his play, Ali?
I think that Lionel Messi is trying to figure out what his role is under Ronald Koeman and Barcelona and what he wants it to be. And that struggle shows up in the way that he performs. Today, he had moments in which he looked very much like
vintage Lionel Messi. And the goal comes from Lionel Messi dropping into a deeper position and playing the ball over the top to Jordi Alba. He's got to find some happy medium between being that guy that plays the ball to Jordi Alba and being the guy that took on Sergio Ramos inside the 18-yard box and Thibaut Courtois came up with the save. Somewhere in between is the greatness of Lionel Messi. If he does that, he'll be fine. But yeah, it is kind of scary to think that he has not scored from open play in 7 matches.
Next question is a great one, Stevie. Who's more important to their team, Van Dijk or Ramos? Isn't that good?
That is a good question. I'll tell you what, that is a good question. I actually don't think one of them is more important than the other one. I think they're both at the same level because without Ramos, Real Madrid ain't winning La Liga. And I got to say that without the signing of Van Dijk, Liverpool, I don't think would have won the Premier League. So that kind of puts them on the same level, would you not say?
Yeah, maybe just Liverpool have got a better attacking threat, so they could help you out a little bit.
Can I say, Dan, that I think Sergio Ramos is more important to Real Madrid than Virgil van Dijk is to Liverpool. And the slight margin in by which I say that is that Joel Matip and Joe Gomez, they're serviceable players, serviceable. But they have mistakes in them with or without Virgil van Dijk.
Yeah.
Rafael Varane is a World Cup winner. And I mean, a World Cup winner, a shutdown defender. When Sergio Ramos is there, he's a shutdown defender. When Papi's not home, then all of a sudden he is melting all over the place. For that very reason, I'm going to say that the leadership of Sergio Ramos for Real Madrid becomes far more consequential.
Stevie, if you were playing Ali in today's game, how would you defend him? Likewise, Ali, how would you play against Stevie if you were playing in his era and diving was not an option? Stevie, how did you tell your players to deal with Ali?
Well, you stand just a little bit off him. You don't get involved with him, because if you get involved with him, he'll go down. And if he doesn't feel the touch, he can't go down. And that means that his touch when he's trying to control the ball has to be perfect.
Did they listen to you,
Stevie? When it's not. Well, they listen to. See, the problem is, Dan, football players do listen to the coaches and they do listen to good advice. The problem is, when they step on the field and the whistle blows, for some reason, they all get dementia until they come back in at half time and you go, remember I told you? And they go, oh yeah, I forgot.
Stevie, who was the one that you told me a story of, like, a player defending at corners and you told him again and again and again what he should have been doing?
No.
What was the story?
No. Actually, the best one was we had a guy, so me and Paul Maron are right, and I used to say to Paul, we'd come in either before the game or half time, we'd be giving some advice, right? And I'd go up to this player. And I said to Paul before, I said, right, watch this. I said, as soon as he starts nodding his head, I know he hasn't a clue what I'm talking about. So I would stand there and Paul would be watching and I'd start talking to him about getting gold side and everything else. And after about 2 seconds, it would start and eventually he'd be like that. And I'd keep a straight face. And then after I'd say, all right, on you go, and he'd walk away and I'd turn to Paul and go, ah. What chance have we got?
Is that just because you're Scottish ways or just because they didn't understand what you were trying to get across?
No. He hadn't a clue what I was talking about. Not a clue.
Ali, how would you play against Stevie?
Well, I was about to say that, honestly, during my playing days, I would have loved to have played for Stevie Nicholl. Oh. And I don't just say that because he's my colleague now, we're golfing buddies and everything.
I would
have loved to have played for Stevie. I always thought that Stevie was a guy that was a player's coach and a guy who knew what he was talking about. And that goes a long way for players like myself in trusting what this guy is saying so that we can go out and execute it. I would have loved the opportunity to have played for Stevie.
Should City be worried by their lack of ruthlessness in front of goal, Stevie? It seems for the last 2 years they always play for the beautiful goal instead of just going out and getting it done.
Yes, it should be. Yeah, because right now they're dropping points because of it. You know, had they been sharper today, they would have beaten West Ham. But they didn't take the chances. Then, of course, they lose goals. They're always losing goals. And when you're always losing goals, then the burden of putting the ball in the back of the net becomes even greater. And when you're struggling at the best of times, it just stays a struggle. So, yeah, they've got a problem right now with that.
Ali, do England have the worst officials when it comes to making decisions with VAR?
Oh.
Yes. Yes, they do. I don't know why they make the process as complicated as they do. It feels like everywhere else they could make mistakes, but at the very least the process in itself seems to go smoothly, and then it's about the interpretation of the call. In England, at least the big time calls that we see and just kind of jump in our eyes, like today's Manchester United and Chelsea, and how is that not a penalty on Azpilicueta by Harry Maguire? I mean, apparently he can chokehold people in the box. I don't quite understand how that happens with multiple eyes looking at the same replay that they don't say, "Hey, man, I really think there's a foul here." That nobody brings that up. That nobody says to the referee, "Hey, man, you may want to go check this." I just don't see that sort of mistake is just flagrant, and VAR should be able to remedy that.
Final question, Stevie. Carry on. We're almost finishing. I thought we might be in a better mood.
I've loosened up a little bit.
You know, haven't you? You know what I mean? Teared up. See, can't be grumpy for too long.
It has to be pressure. Because any rational, calm official should be able to look at that chokehold and say it's a penalty kick and it's a foul. But it must be the pressure of, you know, when something happens, it's right, okay, bang, you're on. That they can't handle it. And then the longer it takes them, the more agitated and the more confused and the more they're looking for something and they're trying to see something and they're not sure and they're thinking, the time's going on, I need to hurry up and make a decision. It can only be pressure because, I mean, really, a cool, calm, collected official, I would think, just sitting at home, if this guy had been sitting at home, he probably went, oh, that's a penalty. It would probably take them 2 seconds.
Right.
As soon as the replay came up, he probably went, that's a penalty. But because he's in this box, he's got all the eyes on him, everybody's waiting for it, it has to be that pressure. It can't be anything else.
Final question, Dan and Stevie. I'm trying to sound more British and Scottish. Which British and Scottish slang, well, English and Scottish, really, English and Scottish slang should I incorporate into my everyday lingo? Brilliant, chalk and cheese, beggar's belief, gobsmack, gutted, sky, rubbish, posh, knackered, blimey. That's quite a list.
Wow.
Well, core blimey. It's got to be core blimey, isn't it?
Core blimey. Yeah, core blimey's a bit London. I would never say core blimey, would I?
Yeah, but that's definitely, it's completely English and British.
It's London. No, core blimey's London. It isn't. Don't just say that everything is London, Stevie.
Oh, sorry. Well, what do you want me to, why don't you just tell me what you want me to say then?
What Scottish slang would have? I tell you a word that you use all the time, which I picked up now and I use far too much, is I. I say I all the time.
I.
Aye.
That's true.
Aye.
Aye, you're right.
I have a question.
You taught your grandkids to say aye, didn't you, Stevie? I remember you telling me this.
Well, we start off trying to teach them words, but then eventually they actually say them because my daughter says aye all the time.
Right.
So they end up saying stuff like that. So we try and teach them to say other daft stuff.
like what, Stephen? Hello, social
Move
services.
Move on.
Go on, Ali.
I have a question. When when Stevie says, "How's your Donald?" referring to Donald Duck and "How's your luck?" Is that a British thing or is that a Stevie thing?
That is a slang thing, isn't it, Stevie?
It's a slang. Slang. Aye, definitely. Aye. Aye. Yeah. How's your Donald? It's Cockney rhyme slang. Aye.
Yeah, yeah, there's a whole lot of it.
Oh, when he tells me when I'm about to hit a shot over water in the golf course and he says, "All the Georgie," and it's all, you know, all the George Best.
All the George Best. Yes, look at George that, Best. Ali.
I'm having to put all that together while Stevie's talking to me. But I'm learning. I'm learning very quickly.
I like it. Right, Stephen, you're done. Going to have some shepherd's pie.
Oh, disappointed,
no. There you go. We'll be back tomorrow for more. Until then, goodbye.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.